Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Just so you know, roadmap for the rest of the show, we're scheduled to be joined by John Morosi in the next segment, and then Will Cain usually joins us on Wednesday. I was out yesterday. I had an incredible time. I got to go tour the Buffalo Trace Distillery in Frankfort, Kentucky. We've got a lot of Outkick fans up in the Buffalo Trace universe there. And so so I spent the day there trying a lot of incredible whiskeys. It was a really cool trip. So that's where I was yesterday. Back today, thanks to Jonas Knox and Jeff Schwartz, by the way, for filling in. But as we sort of project going forward, there's a lot to get into. And I thought one of the most interesting stories that came out yesterday was, I guess it was kind of coming out on Tuesday a little bit, but so a couple days ago and been talked about, bandied about quite a bit, has been what was going on with the Oakland A's and Major League Baseball. And we're going to talk some with John Morosi about this in a bit. But the Oakland A's not happy in their stadium in Oakland. We know already that the Raiders have moved to Vegas. We know already that Golden State has moved from the Oakland side of the Bay back to the San Francisco side of the Bay. And so the last team really left standing in Oakland is the A's. And so one of the questions that I think is out there is, okay, are the A's going to end up working it out with their local administration, local government there? Or is it possible that they are going to relocate? And if they relocated, look, there are several different Canadian areas that have been discussed, bandied about as a potential relocation for Major League Baseball teams. Montreal would like to get a team back. We know, obviously, that Vancouver, rapidly growing area of Canada, both of those areas have been much discussed as potential Major League Baseball expansion sites. And by the way, there does seem to be some likelihood that Major League Baseball might expand, might be adding new franchises going forward. And that would also factor in with this aspect of Oakland. But Rob Manfred, the Major League Baseball commissioner, has mentioned four different cities in the United States. So I'm leaving Vancouver and Montreal out of this equation right now. Four different cities in the United States that would be potentially good destinations for Major League Baseball. In no particular order, Portland, Las Vegas, Nashville, and Charlotte seem to be the four cities that are basically at the upper echelon, at the top of the potential destinations for where these franchises could potentially end up. So, as a part of that question, on Tuesday night, I sent out a poll question for you guys to be able to react to, and I said, hey, where would you put the team? If you were in charge of Major League Baseball and you had to make a choice as to where the next team should be, over 40,000 of you voted in this. And I said, hey, those four cities that I just named, Las Vegas, Portland, Charlotte, and Nashville, where should Major League Baseball put a team? And like I said, tens of thousands of you voted. There may be a little bit of a bias here because this is my hometown, and certainly there are a lot of people in my hometown who follow me. But 52% of you said Nashville should be the city if the Oakland A's had to relocate that they should move to. Nashville was your top choice. 33% of you said Las Vegas. 11% of you said Charlotte. 4% of you said Portland. I think look, I know we got a lot of listeners out in Washington State, out in Oregon, and everything else, Pacific Northwest. I think Portland is such a mess right now with the rioting, with the looting, with the protesting, with the fact that Portland is just not very safe right now, that I actually think Portland has killed its chances of getting a Major League Baseball franchise if they were going to make a choice sooner rather than later, because Portland as a city has a black eye maybe worse than almost any city in America right now, just in terms of all the protesting and the rioting and the looting and the lack of safety, frankly, that exists in downtown Portland. I think that is a major negative. So I'm not surprised that Portland got the fewest number of votes in my poll. Vegas could make a lot of sense because you're already on the West Coast. What an unbelievable double slap in the face Las Vegas would be providing to Oakland if they already took the Raiders and built a brand new stadium, which I'm excited to see at some point in the near future. You already stole the Raiders away to Vegas, and now you are going to potentially try to make a move to get a Major League Baseball team. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit in a moment, but the success of the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, for a long time, there was this idea, oh, Vegas is such a transient town, there's no way they will do very well when it comes to having a pro sports franchise of their own. And then the NHL, to their credit, was like, hey, you know what, we're going to put Vegas Golden Knights here, and they killed it. And we haven't seen yet the overall crowds that are going to be present for the Raiders in their brand new stadium, but I think the early read there is they're going to kill it. And I think one thing that Vegas has working for it is the tourism angle, where, for instance, if you are a fan of the Denver Broncos, or you're a fan of the Chargers, or you're a fan of the Chiefs, it's an easy excuse to be like, hey, let's go to Vegas and go watch our favorite team play, when you know you're going to play a divisional game against them every single year. Like, that's a pretty cool trip to get to take with your buddies, with your friends. Hey, we're going to go out to Vegas. There's tons of hotel rooms. Not super expensive to get to Vegas necessarily. And we'll build an entire weekend around the game that ultimately ends up taking place on Sunday. I can see why that's popular. Certainly, I can see why that's popular for hockey too. The one thing I would wonder about, and I'm not an expert in Las Vegas politics, the one thing I would wonder about is, would you have to, I think you probably, because of how hot it is in Vegas in the summer, I think you would certainly have to build a retractable roof stadium and or a dome stadium in Vegas in order to have the A's play there. And I don't know if in the meantime, in the short term, they could use the Raiders stadium, you know, kind of reconfigure that to be able to play baseball there. But I think it's so god-awful hot in Vegas that when you think about the July, the August, the Septembers, the Junes, how smoking hot it is in that particular location, in that desert, I think you probably would have to have some way to build a dome-related stadium. And I don't know, after building the Vegas Golden Knights facility and after also building the Raiders stadium, whether there is the political will to build another stadium in such a short order, given that Las Vegas was one of the most devastated cities by COVID in terms of unemployment in the entirety of the country. So I think Vegas could make a lot of sense in terms of keeping a team on the West Coast. The other side, if we go to the East Coast, I think Nashville is a no-brainer for a Major League Baseball team. I think it would kill it. Now, whether it's an expansion franchise or whether it is a franchise that it already exists, like the A's, there's a group trying to bring pretty aggressively a team to Nashville. They want to build a brand new downtown stadium, which I think would kill it. And much like Vegas has the tourist impact, I think the number of tourists that Nashville is bringing in every year, the millions of people, already there's a huge crowd in downtown Nashville. The Preds do really well. Obviously, Titans, it's not hard to fill up a stadium for an NFL game because you only got 10 times a year. But I think with 81 different games, there is a tremendous amount of interest that would exist in Nashville, not just for people traveling in to watch their favorite team play, but also for people who are just coming on vacation with families. Major League Baseball is a great summer activity for vacations. And so I agree with the majority of this group that is voting that Nashville, of all of the cities out there, would do the best with a Major League Baseball franchise. You've already got the Titans doing well. You've got the Preds doing well. I think a Major League Baseball franchise in Nashville, if you built a downtown stadium and fit it in the right area, I think it would absolutely dominate. I think it would kill. I think it would be a fantastic addition. I also think, to a large extent, the same thing could be true of Charlotte. So apart, the talk for a long time has been that the Tampa Bay Rays might possibly be interested in relocating. And if they relocated, given the expansion, given the A's, we're talking about multiple different teams potentially in the mix to potentially relocate. And again, I'm using the United States examples that were given by Rob Manfred as the four teams that I'm allowing everybody to actually vote on. Dub, you hear these four cities. I would rank them as Nashville 1, Vegas 2, Charlotte 3, Portland 4, exactly as my audience did, the tens of thousands of people who came and voted as to which city would deserve the Oakland A's if they moved. How would you rank them? Where would be the best location?
I think Nashville and Charlotte would be tied for first, basically, yeah. For me. Just the main reason being the geographic location. If you look at a map of MLB franchises, the only team in the southeastern portion of the United States that's in Major League Baseball is the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
And baseball is a huge, huge part of the culture in the southeast of the United States. So that
you're not counting Tampa Bay or Miami as traditional southern locations.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And to me, it makes just too much sense to not have another team in the southeastern portion of the United States, whether that be Nashville or Charlotte.
Maybe both.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that ends up happening sometime down the line. Then next, I'd have Vegas. I think your concerns over the heat in Las Vegas are very real, and I think there's no way that they would not have a retractable roof or just a dome, just because the summers in Vegas are no joke out in the middle of the desert. I don't think anybody would be wanting to play or watch a game in 111-degree heat in July.
Yeah.
And then fourth, I think it's a pretty simple answer with Portland. When I think of baseball, Portland maybe is like the 70th place in the country that I think of when talking about baseball. So I would have Nashville, Charlotte tied for first, then Las Vegas in third, if you will, then Portland coming in the fourth spot.
Yeah, and again, the other two cities, I think the Portland angle, if they truly are considering Vancouver, you know, geographically, I don't think they would put two teams in the Pacific Northwest like that. So I think probably Portland, if Vancouver is truly being considered. I kind of feel like the Expos, and I understand some people are like, hey, you know, Montreal deserves to, like, they lost a team. To me, when you lose a team, you don't deserve to get back at the top of the line unless your team relocates, right? They basically just wiped out the Expos because they didn't have a good situation and a good setup. If I were Major League Baseball, I would be more interested in sort of advancing my brand in existing American marketplaces as opposed to trying to go to Canada. That would be my thought.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Remember that part of the show where I was like, hey, John Morosi is going to join us next? Actually, I was totally wrong. He's joining us on Friday in this exact same time. So the wonders of my ability to keep guests in order. Dub, did you at any point recognize, hey, Morosi is tomorrow as opposed to Thursday?
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Clay. Every single day the past year plus has felt the exact same. I never know what day it is.
Yeah, I totally get that too. So Morosi will be on with us tomorrow. Instead, the man who sat in on Wednesday's edition of the program, Jeff Schwartz, is back the next day. Usually he would come on with us Thursdays anyway, so he's with us now as he often has been. Jeff, I'm going to start here because this is what we started off the second hour with. Did you pay attention or have you been paying attention to the idea of the Oakland A's moving? And if so, Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred has previously listed four different cities that he would be okay in the United States with having a Major League Baseball franchise. And I'm going west to east here. Portland, Las Vegas, Nashville, Charlotte. You live in Charlotte. You've spent some time in Nashville. Where do you think the next Major League Baseball franchise should be? Where, if they move, should the A's go?
I mean, I'd obviously love to be in Charlotte if I'm choosing who I would pick. Look, we have a beautiful stadium in Uptown already for Triple-A team. I don't think they're going to use that stadium, though, so they have to find somewhere else, which is interesting. They built the stadium but didn't really build it to scale up. You know, Nashville obviously is growing fast, and I mean, would Nashville embrace a team? I imagine they would.
I think it would be killer. It's interesting because I was talking about in the open – Nashville has so many tourists, and I feel like Vegas as well. At this point, when you're going to a city, I'm not sure that the cities are big enough by themselves, but there's so many tourists, millions of people coming into a city like Nashville or certainly Las Vegas, that I feel like people would be looking for things to do. So I think it would be hard to get a ticket because not only would the local population embrace it in cities like Nashville and Las Vegas, which have big tourist towns, but I'm curious on how the weather would work in Las Vegas. And I think in general, the South is undercovered by sports and then Major League Baseball in particular. So I think both Charlotte and Nashville would probably do pretty well.
I think they would do great. And look, here's the thing about Oakland is, and they've tried to get a deal done in like four different parts of the Bay Area. So maybe it's not just the city of Oakland's fault, but that place is a dump, man. Like that's a bad place to play. And I remember I played football there. I mean, and obviously they moved their team, so it's disappointing they're gonna have to leave. Oakland will end up having the Raiders leave. The Warriors went to San Francisco, and now the yep. A's are out of there. It's rough for them, but this is what happens, right? I mean, new stadiums are what people want to see. It's the amenities that people want. I mean, it's hard to get people to get up out of their seats, their house, I should say, and go to a game. And so this is one way to do that, is to have a beautiful stadium and make sure that it's done right. So I would expect them to leave. It'd be great if they came to the South. You're right. The South is kind of underrepresented in pro sports. Obviously, we know it's great in college football, but it'd be great to have a baseball team, another one out in Charlotte or Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, the Atlanta Braves are basically the South's Major League Baseball team because there's no team in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee. Kentucky kind of has the Cincinnati Reds, but still no team in Kentucky, no team in Alabama, no team in Mississippi, no team in Louisiana. There are a lot of different states where there is a rabid baseball community, and you can just look at the College World Series and see how dominated it is very often by SEC teams. This, to me, feels like a no-brainer in terms of trying to get more baseball in the Southeast. All right, let's pivot to the NFL, and I feel like this is a question that we've been asking every day for a couple of weeks now. Blake Bortles coming in as a camp arm for the Green Bay Packers, as the expectations are that Aaron Rodgers is not going to be showing up maybe ever again. We'll see what happens there. Do you think Aaron Rodgers has played his final game for the Packers?
I mean, everything tells you yes, but I'm going to say no, just because the Packers – kind of have the leverage here. I know people disagree with that, but they're able to just hold on to him if they want. If they don't play him, if they don't get him off their roster, and they endure a pretty big cap hit, even if they trade him after June 1st, they still have Jordan Love on their roster, right? And if he retires, the money's off their books. Like, I think they have the leverage in this. They could get something back for Aaron Rodgers, but if you trade him to the Broncos, or really any team you trade him to, that draft pick is going to be in the 20s, right? Because we know that they're going to be in the playoffs most likely. So, I don't think they're going to get the value they want, and I think they're going to try to keep him and force him to show up or just not play this year.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about the leverage situation here. And I want to go back into Aaron Rodgers in a sec, but you've been in a lot of different NFL locker rooms. How do you think the offensive line for the Green Bay Packers is reacting to this dispute over the course of the summer? Like, are they texting each other like every little latest update? Are they putting pressure at all on Aaron Rodgers in general? Like, how does that story play out?
That's a good question. I think right now it's nothing, right? It's just it's Aaron Rodgers sniping at the Packers. I'm sure he's talking to his offensive lineman about, hey, you know, this is the way I feel about the Packers and you know, X, Y, Z and blah, blah, blah. I think there's definitely talk about that. But as far as him saying, like, I'm never going to play for you guys again, I mean, maybe it's possible that he's saying that. And I'm not sure that they might, you know, they might not even believe him. But I think in general, Clay, most of us want our friends to get the most money and be happy, right? And I think that if you're David Bakhtiari, the left tackle of the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers, like, look, I'm going to get out. I don't want to be here. Here's where I don't want to be here. I think ultimately you're going to be upset. Your friend's gone, you know, a future Hall of Famer's gone, the MVP, but you're happy that your friend gets what he wants, right? And your friend gets, you know, goes to where he wants. So I think in the end they'll be happy for him. Obviously disappointed they can't play with him, but I think happy overall in the end with the result if Rodgers is happy.
I saw a tweet and it made me think about you because I know this is one of the quarterbacks that you used to play with, and I have I found myself in this situation a bunch too. Eli Manning tweeted yesterday morning, "I woke up a little nervous today. The head coach of the 7-8-year-old softball team can't make the game tonight. I'm in charge and on the mound." How do you think Eli will do as the pitcher in softball?
How old is this kid? How old is he?
7 and 8 year old kids.
Okay, so I have a personal gripe here. My son is 6 years old. Okay,
yeah,
turned 7 this summer. And somehow he got stuck in machine pitch. And I do not understand how this happened in Charlotte. I talked to the commissioner of the Little League, and I was like, look, my son, he skipped coach pitch last year because of COVID, right? He played T-ball.
Yeah.
And he's six. There's a kid on his team turning 9 this week.
Yeah, yeah.
How
he's got a mustache. Yeah. I'll tell you this. Like, So we have games. We had a game last night. I feel like I'm a major league player manager right now. We have games Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So 4 straight days. We played last night, Wednesday.
Wait, then four straight days of baseball or 4 straight games?
4 straight games, like because of rain delays and everything.
Oh,
I know.
Okay,
so yeah. I'm saying I think I'm in like major league baseball. People are like asking me to do things. I'm like, like sweating bullets. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't have time to do anything. I got to be at this Little League game and make sure that I'm coaching third base, which I'll get to you in a moment. But so I have a kindergartner who's, playing coach pitch, and then I'm coaching 10-year-old boys baseball. And this is the first year of kid pitch, which actually is much less stressful because I've been in that Eli Manning situation where you get the call up as the pitcher and you are just so nervous as the dad or the mom, whoever it might be, that's out there on the field that has to make perfect pitches because you only get – I think it's like 5 pitches. And so if you're not throwing strikes, you know, the kids can't hit. It's not like you can walk them, right? So like you have that awful feeling where you're like, hey, this has to be the last pitch. And then if you drop one in the dirt or you throw one too high or God forbid you hit them and they're trying to bail out on you while you're throwing it, like it is just a super stressful situation to be in.
I could definitely understand that it's super stressful, but imagine your kid that's 6 years old. Everyone else is hitting off the machine because they're 8, and he's 6, and he can't do anything. Like it's just a terrible feeling as a parent watching your kid who's not supposed to be in a league. Like, oh man, I get it, man. It's funny watching your kids now play sports.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough.
And I think I'm pretty even keel. Like I understand the age thing, obviously, and I just want it's like you just root for him to just do well because you want him to be good with his friends, right? You want him to like be able to play with us. It's a weird feeling, you know.
Hey, I'll tell you what the toughest thing. And I've been now at this point with my kids. They're old enough where we've done basically every sport. You know, we've played soccer, flag football, basketball, baseball, even hockey. Like we basically played everything in my household at this point. The kids have, the boys have. The toughest single thing to do: your kid pitching. By far the toughest thing because it's them on the mound. Like it can be tough for them to come up and bat, like you're talking about the pitching machine and all that stuff. But they're only up to bat for, you know, whatever it is, 6 or 7 pitches on average. And so it's not that long to be stressful for them. When they are pitching, every single pitch is, you know, they're like either throwing a ball or they're throwing a strike, and it is excruciating to watch. By far the toughest thing I think to be a parent for is pitching little league, because, you know, there's just so much variety. You know, if it's 3-2, the kids probably aren't going to swing, so if you throw a strike, you're probably going to get a strikeout. If you walk them, they're probably going to end up on third base because there's lots of pass balls and everything else. I think by far, as a dad of three who's watched every sport and, you know, gone and participated in all of them on some level, pitching is the toughest to watch your young kids do.
I mean, I pitched in Little League and all through high school. I'm curious. I'm going to ask my dad now about this, like how stressed he was when
I think
was
when
pitching.
You get older, it probably is less, you know, like by the time you're, you know, high school age or even teenage age, because the number of times that you're going to throw a strike is a lot higher. But the range of potential outcome for 9 and 10 year old boys baseball is so massive, right? Like you can throw a pitch behind them or you can throw a strike right down the middle. Every single pitch, there's a wide risk. Like me in the tee box playing golf, or you probably too, there's no telling where the tee shot's going to go.
Anyways, a tee shot for me, I'm golden.
You're good off the tee.
I mean, like if I get the ball, you know, I'm good basically up to like 15 yards. And then it's just like,
you're
then
from one side of the green to
yards,
the other.
Like, yeah. 50 yards, I'm done. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Just terrible.
Yeah, I'm a mess when it comes to pretty much all my golf game, but the potential permutations of every golf swing, if you put them like on a scatter plot chart, would be everywhere. All right, so look, we spent a lot of time so far in the show talking about the NFL schedule release. To me, more so than anything else, what this represents is just the NFL as every other sport's daddy. Because they can parachute right into the middle of the NHL and the NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball regular season, and be like, hey, Heisman, you know, stiff arm. I know it's still 4 months until these games are going to be played, but everybody is talking about them. Having said that, did anything stand out to you in a big way about the schedule release as it pertains to something you weren't anticipating or did learn based on the schedule?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at the Aaron Rodgers situation in Green Bay and seeing how many primetime games they got, right? Because if the NFL feels that it's the Jordan Love show, they probably would get less. But I feel like the Packers still got the normal amount of primetime games.
You're right, they did.
And so it kind of leads me to think that, hey, maybe they believe, you know, they'll be able to, you know, to keep Rodgers going. But, I mean, look, we know the opponents, right? So, you know, the schedule is just when it feels real. It feels like we're getting, you know, we're getting the kickoff. I thought that, you know, Cowboys, Bucks, you could say, you know, you could have saved that game for maybe later in the year. But I mean, if you want to start off with a bang and get, you know, that great TV number for the first game of the year, that's the way to do it, right? You have the Cowboys against Tom Brady. I mean, everyone's going to tune in to basically root against both teams if you're not a fan of either one of those teams or players. It's a great way to go. I've said this to you many times. I'm so excited for this upcoming season to have fans back in the stands. It's
no
just
doubt.
Like it's going to feel normal again, and we're going to have his life as back to normal as we can get it. And it's going to be so much fun. Even college football, week zero game. You know, I mean, UCLA, Hawaii. I'm probably going to stay up until 8 in the morning to watch that game in Hawaii. They don't even have a stadium. They're playing in like a municipal park this season in Hawaii. Like, I'm just so excited for all the football to come back.
Amen. And I think we're going to have full stadiums because of how successful we had, like the big fight down in Dallas, 15,000 people for the UFC. The Braves and the Rangers both have full stadiums going forward. Do you believe, like, some of the interesting storylines? It seems like the Bears, based on where they're slotted, there might be a gamble that maybe Justin Fields is going to start. I think it's fair to say that Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, assuming they are healthy, are both going to be starting every single game for their teams. Trey Lance, Mac Jones, or Justin Fields, Shorts, which of those three guys starts first and gets the nod from their team in your mind?
Oh, I think it's Justin Fields. I think he gets it from day one.
You think he starts? He beats out Andy Dalton and starts for the Bears from week one?
I think so, yeah. I think he's from the beginning, right away. That's what I think. I think it's his job.
Trey Lance likely not to play at all if Jimmy G stays healthy. Is that fair to say? Do you think Mac Jones?
No,
you think he might come in?
I think Trey Lance has a good chance to play. I think rookie of the year odds for him are fairly interesting.
Yeah. So you don't buy into the idea that Jimmy G is going to be the guy. Do you think Mac Jones beats out Cam at any point? How would you assess those other two guys in terms of if you think Justin Fields is going to be the third to start and might start starting week one, when do Trey Lance and or Mac Jones get the start?
So, you know, the interesting part about the Mac Jones and Cam Newton thing is the base of the offense for both quarterbacks would be the same, but obviously you're going to put in plays that Cam Newton has traditionally run very well, right? All those quarterback powers, quarterback reads, all the play action passes off of that, and everything that, you know, kind of off of that. So, you know, that is what you do with that offense. Well, then if Mac Jones comes in, you're not running that offense, right? So now what are you doing? Are you just transitioning at some point in the middle of the year to a different offense? It just feels like really tough to get done that way. So I think if Cam's the guy, he's the guy all season.
Outstanding stuff as always. Jeff Schwartz, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend, my man.
Take care.
That's Jeff Schwartz. When we come back, we got some early week one lines that are already out. You can gamble on them. What does Vegas think? What do the odds makers think are likely to be the biggest toss-up games going forward? We will discuss.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming back in the top of the third hour here, I'm going to dive back into the NFL schedule and tell you the five games to start the season that I am most excited for, and I'll break all those down for you, count them down. But the odds makers have already put out the numbers for week one, even though these games are 4 months away and many different things can obviously transpire between now and when the games actually get here. I was intrigued by how quickly they had these numbers up. And Dub, you are a big gambler as well. And I am in the process of pulling these things up. Let me see if I can get it officially pulled up on my phone. But FanDuel, you can go to FanDuel.com/Clay and get all of your bets in, no matter what you are pursuing. What line stood out to you in general about NFL Week 1 action?
Well, there's a few. And first of all, I'm a big teaser guy in the NFL. And there are just... I am very tempted to already have a lot of
get
risk.
Money down. You're ready. You're ready to
I'm
put
ready
money
to
down
roll,
already.
Man. I'm ready to go. But one thing that I did that did catch my eye was that Denver Broncos game on the road playing week one against the New York Giants, because as we stand right now, the Denver Broncos are a slight favorite on the road to New York. So,
which is telling us that every line tells a story, as my buddy Todd Furman likes to tell us. And we were talking about this off-air, Dub. In our opinion, there's no way Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater would be favored in that game against the Giants.
Yeah, this is kind of like a halfway line to me, because obviously if Aaron Rodgers is quarterbacking, they're probably more like -3 or -3.5.
Yep.
If Aaron Rodgers is indeed not the quarterback, they're probably more like +2.5, +3. So I think Vegas is kind of just splitting the difference here with this line. So it's kind of a risky one if you think Aaron Rodgers is going to wind up in Denver. Well, I would probably recommend putting a lot of money on the Broncos. If you don't think so, you think he stays in Green Bay, I would consider putting a fair amount of coin on the New York Giants there in week one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I told you guys going to break that I was going to tell you about the lines that were the most basically toss-up games. Jacksonville, and I think this is the worst game, by the way, of week one. The Jags are a 1.5-point favorite against the Texans. I don't know about you, Dub, but I look at the Texans' schedule and... how many games do you think the Texans might actually be favored in? I believe their over-under for wins is 4.5, but it's possible looking at their schedule that they could almost be an under. If you're a home underdog against the Jags, who are coming off of a 1-15 season, and I know they've got Urban Meyer now and they got Trevor Lawrence and they may end up with Tim Tebow, but if you're a home underdog against a 1-15 team, you're not going to be favored against very many teams. This is going to be one of the longest seasons maybe ever in Houston Texans fandom, And I think you just got to be sitting around hoping that you're going to end up with the number one pick in addition to whatever other number one picks you might hopefully be able to put together. But the Jags are a 1.5-point road favorite right now over the Texans. This is according to FanDuel. You can get your bets in at FanDuel.com/Clay. The other closest lines, we just talked about Denver. They're around a point favorite over the Giants. But the Chargers are a 1-point favorite over Washington. That is an incredible toss-up game. And then New England is only a 1.5-point favorite over Miami. I bet that's the smallest amount that New England has been favored over the Dolphins in Foxborough in what? What do you think, Dub? 20 years? I can't imagine that line has been that close to a pick'em ever. That obviously is a testament to the Patriots coming back to the pack, but also the trend lines being very positive for Brian Flores in year three with the Dolphins.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They have pretty much dominated the Dolphins in New England. Now, as a lot of people know, when they go down to Miami, it's kind of a different story, even in the Patriots' heyday and Miami's kind of down years. That was one of the weirdest little things.
The Dolphins always seem to have the Patriots' number in Miami. I think partly that's just weather, right? And I think vice versa, the Dolphins getting an advantage here to get to go to Foxborough on September 12th because it's probably not going to be like super hot, but it's not like it's going to be freezing cold. It feels like they always try to ship the Dolphins up to Foxborough in, you know, December or January when that kind of weighs on them even more. I feel like they'll fit in pretty well. I kind of like the Dolphins to pull off an upset there.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they caught a big break in the schedule here, getting to go up to New England so early on in the season because, you just said, the weather shouldn't be a factor.
And then your point is 100% true that Bill Belichick and the Patriots have not typically traveled very well to South Florida, and I think that's the juxtaposition in the other way. The Dolphins go far north, and it's freezing. Well, the Patriots get used to playing in the cold weather, and then boom, suddenly they're down in the heat and the humidity of South Florida, and their bodies just don't seem to adjust in the same way. When we come back, top of the third hour, I will break down with you all of the best games, in my opinion, for the start of the NFL schedule. I'll break them all down for you. Then we're going to be joined by Will Cain, as we usually are on Wednesday. Instead, he is going to join us on the Thursday edition of the program. That usually is a fantastic conversation. That is next. This is OutKick. Thanks for hanging out with us on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.